Greetings and welcome to St. Dominic's Weekly. This is Father Michael. On today's show, very special occasion of the solemnity of our Holy Father Dominic. This week, we're celebrating the feast day of St. Dominic, the founder of the Order of Preachers, the Dominican Order. Today, I do something a little different with Father Isaiah and I. We tell seven secret stories of St. Dominic that perhaps you've never heard. So we begin each one with, did you know that Dominic did X, Y, or Z, right? So hopefully these are new to you. They were new to me before I went on pilgrimage. So even as a Dominican, I didn't know all the stories surrounding St. Dominic. I begin with a kind of quiz for Father Isaiah. I put him on the spot, literally. I ask him what the Assassin's Cross is, give him multiple choice. You have to keep listening to see if he passes the test. It was not an easy test, I'll tell you that for sure. And anyway, on this Holy Father Dominic, may you, in hearing these stories, truly think about your own story of grace. God has given each one of us a kind of story, a dream for our lives. And so hopefully by listening to the stories of St. Dominic, you might be able to connect with the way that God has broken into the story of your life, that you might share that great story of how God has blessed you with others. May these secret stories of St. Dominic truly inspire you to share your story of the Lord. And whether you're on the go or taking it slow, many, many blessings as you enjoy today's show.
Greetings and welcome back to St. Dominic's Weekly. This is Father Isaiah. That's Father Michael.
Here we are. It's a feast of Holy Father Dominic this weekend. So I thought rather than do a kind of podcast talking about Dominic, let's share some behind-the-scenes stories. We're doing some videos behind the scenes at St. Dominic's. And I thought,
the church,
yeah. The actual visual church. What about kind of behind the scenes of his life?
Right.
So I thought of the seven secrets of St. Dominic's story. Seven secret stories of St. Dominic. Seven secret stories. Yeah, alliteration.
I just want you to keep on saying that because that's
my alliteration down.
Just happily entertaining.
The seven secret stories of St. Dominic that I've never shared.
Okay. All right.
At least I don't know. And in fact, so we split this up. I think you have three stories,
mm-hmm.
and I've got four stories,
right?
Because I'm greedy. But
you've actually been to the lands of St. Dominic.
Yeah.
Too,
so let me just say as a preface here. These, and I know these are quote unquote secret stories, if you will. Now, maybe some people have heard some, or if you've been on pilgrimage yourself or are familiar with St. Dominic, maybe you will have heard some of these stories. But I'll be really honest, I didn't know any of these stories with a particular detail and impact until I actually went on pilgrimage. Mm. So I had been I've been a Dominican for 10 plus years. I had been a Dominican priest. And it wasn't until I actually went on pilgrimage that I really familiarized myself with some of what we might call details of his history or story. But I learned something new about him, and being in the place where he preached and walked and where he did ministry just made those stories either come alive or just I was aware of the story in a new way. And so I want to share some of those stories that were part of my experience of pilgrimage and I think are at the heart of our own Dominican spirituality.
And what's really beautiful about your experience is that you actually walked into places he walked, you actually breathed the air that he breathed and all that such. Having that experiential knowledge of he was here too.
And this isn't one of the stories I show, but being one of the most powerful moments was sitting in his choir stall.
Wow.
So in Osma de Burgos, just the city of Osma there, there's a cathedral where he was before he started his group, his Mendicant Order. He was the rector. So he was a canon, which meant that basically a religious priest. Basically a diocesan religious priest, in a sense, a diocesan priest, but connected that to the cathedral in a religious way, chanting the hours and so forth. And so he had a particular, as a rector, he had a specific choir stall, like prior here. If you've ever joined us for morning prayer or evening prayer, you know we tend to sit in similar seats every day, depending on your role as lector or cantor. Yeah. Yeah. The prior has his own seat.
Right.
So you know where the prior sits.
And consequently, you know when he's not
there. That's exactly right. You get to spy on him. But so they knew where Dominic, so they know what the prior, the equivalent of the prior for the cathedral would be there. And so we know the seat, the choir stall that Dominic occupied for his chanting. So actually visiting there, and it wasn't on the itinerary, so visiting there, being able to actually sit in that seat to be able to chant, we chanted the Salve Regina, the Dominican tone, and the O Lumen to St. Dominic. That was a special moment. But places like that, you were just the pilgrimage kind of brought alive.
Yeah.
And so learning more about St. Dominic, I think, helped me appreciate my own Dominican vocation.
Right.
And hopefully sharing these stories of St. Dominic will give you a sense of that power and spirituality in the way that St. Dominic as a patron and the patron of your particular parish, for those who are parishioners and connected, truly can live that gospel and radiate his light and joy.
So let's get to it.
Let's get to it. So
Seven
secret stories of St. Dominic. So let me just start with the first story, because I don't know, and maybe I'll do, we did with the C.S. Lewis and got good feedback. We did the You Don't Know Jack segment.
Yeah. Do you know Dominic?
Do you know Dominic? So it's a game show. Do you know Dominic? Here's my first story. This is something I had not heard of, or at least wasn't, if I had heard it, I hadn't remembered it with any kind of detail. The Assassin's Cross. Do you know the Assassin's Cross?
I love that title.
I love that title. It's a great title. So we'll do multiple tries. We're going to make it a little good. So I'm going to put you on the spot.
Right.
Okay. So the Assassin's Cross is either A, the place where a Benedictine legate was assassinated in those years before the order in that Cathar Valley. And so they put up a cross to memorialize where he was killed, that Benedictine legate that Dominic was with. So that's option A. Option B, it's the place where St. Dominic did some trash talking to people who wanted to assassinate him. Or C, it's the place that's memorialized by Dominicans as a place where Dominic preached, but it's the place where St. Peter Martyr, in fact, was killed and wrote in his own blood, "I believe in God, credo and unum Deum," and ended up converting the lives of those who were assassinated.
Yeah.
So which one? So one of those, two of those are false. One of them is true. So A, the Benedictine ambassador was murdered.
Right.
It was a place of Dominic's trash talking. Or C, it's the place where Dominic preached. He was there. We know he was there. But where Peter Martyr later on was actually killed, which is in one of our windows. So A, B, or C. Do you know? So Father Isaiah, do you know Dominic?
I want to say virtue is in the middle, so I'm going to say with B.
Ding, 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 ding. You are right. We did not rehearse this.
No, either. We didn't.
So every one of those things, stories I told was actually true.
They're all true stories.
But the place, so the Assassin's Cross is a cross which is between the little country towns in France of Pruy and Fanjeaux, which are there today. And once again, being on pilgrimage, there may be big corporations that own the land now. I mean, I have no idea who owns it, but it is just wheat fields and large swaths of open land and a little cottage here or two. But I can't imagine, except for the indoor plumbing and some of the Wi-Fi connections and towers that you see maybe on a hill or two or there for cell phone reception, it probably hasn't changed in the last day. It looks like it could have looked 800. You could film a movie there right now really easily and make it a period piece. Absolutely. So there's this little trail that goes from in these two little French towns. And on there is, on that path, it showed me, there's this big stone cross called the Assassin's Cross, and it marks the place where St. Dominic, and of course I was being a little colloquial, but basically did some trash talking to those who were going to assassinate him. And the story is around the time of Dominic wanting to preach to the Albigensians, those Cathars.
So this is very early on.
Very early on. It's before any gathering of fellow followers. The Benedictines were given the job of trying to preach and convert and bring folks to Christ. And they were met with resistance. And not only with resistance, there was a hit put on the main Benedictine ambassador, if you will. And so he was killed. He was murdered. And so they sent in the army. There was bloodshed. It was really messy violence. Mm-hmm. Terrible, terrible time. Bloodshed on both sides. Well, the word got around that Dominic was next on the hit list. They put a hit on Dominic out.
Right.
And so the expectation was that he would go into hiding. And he was like, no, why would I go into hiding? I could be a martyr. Like, I'm ready to be a martyr. Although he did, as he's reflected to his friends, he said, I don't feel worthy to be a martyr. But if that's what God has for me, I'm not going to stop preaching the gospel simply because I'm fearful of my life, might be, because there's this hit out, my life will be taken from me. So he, instead of like many, and prudent people, avoiding places that were known with ruffians and other places. It's like the, what's in Star Wars where the guy go, they go to that one place where the ruffians are.
Luke, yeah, when
they
Tatooine?
Meet. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, when they go to the Obi-Wan
they
Kenobi
go to
takes them.
Yeah,
they go to Nevermore, villainous and scum. We'll be back. Yeah. But that's where Mos they meet Eisley, Han Solo. Yeah. Yeah, wherever they meet Han Solo in that bar. Right. It's like, yeah, so Dominic's got to go to the bar.
Yeah.
So to preach. And so he could either eschew that, he can go the other way. So he doesn't. He goes right across the field. And the whole way, he basically says, here I am.
Yeah.
And he begins to sing and chant, make his presence known, basically wave
waving
the
flag
of his friend,
am.
Saying, here I am. If you want to kill me, go ahead and kill me. I'm going to preach the gospel. He begins to share the good news and sing and chant. Well, the people who were kind of following him and were looking said, this guy's crazy. And the assassins actually had set up a little bit of a trap for him on the road. Well, when they saw how kind of courageous and basically, how to put it, mocking them by worshiping.
Like, yeah.
He wasn't trash talking literally, but through his effervescent worship of God,
yeah.
Was basically saying, here I am, do what you will. They were moved and they said, you know what? We want to hear what this guy has to say because this guy is crazy enough to be right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So as the story goes, he actually ends up preaching to those would-be assassins and ends up not only persuade them, but they kind of changing their hearts so they wouldn't want to kill him anymore. But they ended up converting back to the faith.
Yeah, became followers.
He became followers, exactly. So it's a great story. It's one that I hadn't heard or remembered until I saw that cross there, and it was described to me, that little story of basically where Dominic's prayer and boldness is a kind of taunt, if you will,
right.
against the perpetrators, would be perpetrators of violence.
Yeah.
So he was taunting violence by standing courageously up, a kind of a nonviolent resistance.
Wow.
To that sense of violence or threat. And he says,
yeah.
No, I'm standing here. You won't move me. I'm going to preach. And they were moved, in
yeah.
fact.
Yeah, the truth
that.
Will not be daunted.
So the assassin's
yeah.
cross. Wow. And it is true, too, that I told that the option C about Peter Martyr. Peter Martyr was indeed killed for his faith.
Right.
He did write, I believe in God, Creator Nunum Deum, in his own blood.
Mm-hmm.
Very powerful story.
Yeah.
And the people who actually killed, the person that killed him actually became a Dominican
yeah, right.
rather later on after
yeah.
that and made penance and ended up being one of the blesseds
yeah.
Along with Peter. So now that is a true story as well, but not connected to the Assassin's Cross. So Assassin's Cross.
Wow.
100% for you so far.
Yeah.
All right. So very good. So you. So I'll hand it up to you. So second story. Second secret story.
The second secret story. I mean, it's something that I would imagine that this story actually hits your life in a kind of a personal way.
Okay.
Insofar that St. Dominic, he had this proclivity or this tendency of when he would travel from one town to the other, he would travel in town with his shoes on. And then the moment he left the town's border, he would take off his shoes.
Sandals, baby.
Uh-huh. And he would walk barefoot to the next town.
Ooh.
Over a brook and stream and all that such. And then once he's in the town proper, he would put his shoes back on. To the annoyance of the brothers who would always ask him, put your shoes on, or can I carry your shoes for you, or all those other things. Of which he was like, no, I mean, this is part of my penance and... That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah, and in fact, isn't there a story that...
He's cut his feet, probably.
He cut his feet, yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, that's
probably.
A big... That's a big surprise. No, I think there's a story, too, where he asks someone to help him get to the next town. He's not quite sure where he's where the
yeah.
next town. This is pre-GPS days. There's right. there's no Google
yeah.
Maps. So
yeah.
so he hires a guide, or at least has someone who's willing to be a guide. Turns out the guide is an enemy.
Right.
And sees yeah. that he's doing this penance, or not, I'll put it, not necessarily an enemy, but not a friend.
Yeah, he's
right?
not a friend. Yeah.
Yeah, sympathetic to the Cathars. And so knows the way there, but decides to take him through the bramble bushes.
Yeah, the worst possible way. Yeah,
yeah, the most jaggedy and difficult road to traverse. And yet he himself is brought to the faith by Dominic, simply realizing, Dominic at some point figures
yeah.
out what's going on. Like mm-hmm. he's obviously taking him a circuitous, very perilous kind of way.
Right.
But he doesn't complain or be upset or say, I'm not going to, you know, pay you for guiding me. He just is simply joyful the whole time. Yeah. And it has a kind of countenance where he just kind of suffers patiently and joyfully. And his patient and joyful endurance actually melts this person's heart, right. Converts his heart. So Dominic doesn't actually have to say anything.
Yeah.
He just shows how he's able to witness to that sense of patience and joy in suffering and equanimity and not complaining or lashing out. And that's like, wow, that how powerful that is. So that's one of the secret stories that Dominic, we often think of for Dominicans, is like, oh, the great preaching he did, all the wonderful ways in which he was able to bring the life of the gospel and Christ's words and deeds alive. True. Yeah. But like often it's associated with St. Francis and preach always and if necessary use words. Mm-hmm. Well, Dominic definitely lives that, that maxim in terms of he converted more people simply by his witness.
Yes.
And this is and that penance and that patient endurance. So that's a great story. Number two, Carcassonne.
Carcassonne.
So this was
great board game.
Great board game. Exactly. Yeah. Great board game. Classic. Yeah. Classic board game. But this was actually not even on our pilgrimage in terms of itinerary. But we were traveling Barcelona to Lourdes, and it was like, well, we can travel. It's going to be quite a journey. But what if we took a little bit of a wide angle and ended up going up through Carcassonne and then winding our way back through France that way? So we did. And what I discovered was in Carcassonne, very much the town, at least there's a part of town in Carcassonne, which is the old town.
Okay.
So think of Solvang down the highway, if you're familiar with it. Basically, they just kept the kind of a tourist, it's kind of a tourist attraction more than anything, but it's all the old style kind of housing.
The walls and walls. All that?
Yeah, so the walls of the city are there, and they've been, I'm sure, rebuilt and restructured in some way, but the old town is there with the cathedral there.
Oh, okay.
And at the cathedral, and we were able to celebrate Mass in the cathedral, actually in the kind of a side chapel there, because they were actually still, they were doing construction. But the guide who was with us on the pilgrimage said, oh, Father Michael, I know you'll appreciate this. There is a plaque in the cathedral of Carcassonne, which basically memorializes Saint Dominic. Once again, this is before Saint Dominic is, quote unquote, Saint Dominic is
the founder.
Before Dominic. It was the order is founded in 1216. Well, in 1213, he was preaching in that area, and the bishop asked him to come to Carcassonne and to preach a Lenten, basically during Lent,
kind of
Lenten mission. So for 40 days there.
So all kind 40 of, days. Wow.
Exactly. So he kind of takes over the cathedral parish there for in the Lent of 1213. And in recognition of the powerful preaching, there's this plaque that's there that said Saint Dominic preached here during the Lenten
between
season.
Between these days.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Yeah. So at the time the church was under construction when we went a couple of years ago, and they weren't letting anyone in. But my tour guide was like, no. She was like pointing to me, like I was of course in my habit. She's like, this person's a Dominican. The sign talks about Saint Dominic. We're coming in. And so we gave our hard hat. She basically wouldn't take no for an answer. So we were in a live construction zone.
Hard hats.
No, just me. They only let me in. So they had a picture of myself and God, maybe a couple others.
I'm just imagining you in full heart.
Full habit with a hard hat. Exactly. We had a hard hat and the goggles and all that. They made us come in. But we got our picture by our sign there. And in some ways, I can imagine he was basically got to live the life of, it's a cathedral, but still, by our standards, kind of a country priest. So he was preaching, doing, baptism, doing the sacraments, anointing of the sick. And for him, I almost think, and maybe this is my own projection, but at the time he had been kind of nudged to be bishop a couple of times. In fact, he had been formally elected bishop, but turned it down. And so part of Carcassonne's strategy was to be in the area, but to not be kind of in the limelight of saying, they wanted to be the bishop of Navarre and other kind of like major metropolitan areas. And he was like, no, I do not want to be bishop. But after that time in 1213, he said, well, I would like to, I'm happy to preach like a bishop, so I would be happy to have those functions. So he was given the ability to preach. So when I say he comes and preaches for Lent, people are like, you preach for Lent. Unless you were a bishop during that time, you could not preach.
Yeah.
You weren't allowed to preach, right? So priests could not preach. In fact, a lot of them didn't have enough studies to preach,
right?
And really know things that well. And so when he was asked to preach, he was asked to be in the role of a bishop.
Yeah.
for that particular time. Mm-hmm. And to exercise that ministry. So he loved that ministry,
right?
But he didn't want to actually have all the...
Actually have the hat.
Yeah, exactly. He didn't want all the pomp and circumstance. He wanted to be he wanted all the sacramental responsibility and preaching care of people.
But not the administrative.
But not the administrative or the titles or any of the accoutrement that went with that. He just wanted to be a simple friar, not... and live poorly and simply, which to that point wasn't an option in the church, right?
Yeah,
so there wasn't a mendicant, there wasn't active religious who were also contemplative and mendicant in that way. He started that.
And that also speaks to his mindset about what the Order of Preachers is about, or what the vision he had for what would become the Order of Preachers.
Yes.
Of these poor men who are doing this part of the apostolate,
yes,
of preaching for the salvation of souls.
That's right.
And you know, well educated, but they're poor, and all these other kind of
absolutely things that weren't necessarily things that didn't necessarily go together at the time.
Yeah.
he wanted to put together at the time.
So he melted. Yeah,
exactly. So you want lots of study, but we're not forming academics. We're preaching the faith. So we're studying in order that we might share that. We are contemplative, so we pray, but that we might share fruits of contemplation, mm-hmm, right? We hold all things in common, but we live simply, that we might be agile enough and not so much possessed by our possessions,
right,
in order to be free to preach the gospel. So these things that seem perhaps contradictory, he wants that to live that kind of like balanced life that he thought Christ himself. So the Carcassonne days, that second, once again, to wrap up the third secret story of St. Dominic, Carcassonne, the Lenten preaching, and his real vision that to be able to take on that pastoral ministry that he ends up communicating to the friars, because then we got, as it were, universal indult or universal permission to preach wherever we went, which was extraordinary at that time. Mm-hmm. Basically, we had the power of bishops. And that also reminds me of, you'll often see Dominicans when we do processions, the cross is not facing outward, but the corpus of the cross faces the priest. That was at the time, a privilege for bishops.
Ah.
And he said, that's something I went along with the idea of to be able to celebrate Mass with a portable altar.
Mm.
So you have to be saying Mass in a church, but at the time, if you're preaching it on the road, if you brought an altar stone, that would serve as an altar. And so to be able to preach Mass on the go, hear confessions universally, preach universally, and have a certain style of procession that were following Christ, these were all things that were usually reserved to bishops, but that were granted to the order. And all that was formed kind of in Carcassonne.
That's
there
amazing.
You go. Yeah. So it's one of those cool hidden stories. Yeah, one of those stories that I think that, frankly, don't tell. If you're listening to a story and you hear this story, you might know more than some Dominicans.
Yeah,
know.
Yeah.
This is not necessarily well known. So so story number four.
Story number four is going back to preaching.
Actually. Okay, yeah.
Tell so me. Not only does it speak to St. Dominic's preaching prowess, but also to his athletic ability.
Okay, so let's start out with, did you know that Dominic
had great hands with the ball?
No, I didn't.
Okay, not a ball really, but more like with a bird. But do you know this story?
No, tell me the story. I'm excited now.
So he was preaching a mission. Now, I don't know if this was at Carcassonne. I doubt it. But while he was preaching, there was a raven that was squawking around the church. Now, of course, the windows were open and, you know, for the free air and such. And the bird was just insistently squawking. And St. Dominic himself would say that this bird is not a bird, but rather a manifestation of the evil one. So when the bird was kind of flying past him, he caught the bird.
No.
And he started to defeather the bird.
Right there.
So Holy Father Dominic had great hands.
Wow. I did not.
You didn't know that story?
No. As you bring it to mind, I have a vague recollection, but I'd never put it into the category of the dexterous athletic hands of Dominic.
He had great hands.
Yeah, to catch a bird out of the midair.
Yeah.
That's interesting, because there are stories of other saints talking about how different birds or spider animals will distract people from hearing the preaching and the, you know, be like, oh, so the devil's trying to kind of get in the way. So for Dominic, was it a crow or a raven?
It was a black bird. I wrote in my notes, it was a raven.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. I don't know, but it was a black bird.
Quote the raven, nevermore.
No. Nope.
So basically, he caught the raven, it basically made him his ability to pester, render that that ineffectual and then kept going.
And then kept on talking about his homily.
Yeah. Oh, wow. What a prop. Talk about props. Sometimes they talk about preachers having props. That was quite...
that's quite the prop.
And a distraction. Now, we wouldn't do that if there was, you know, during the time, if there's a young child squawking or something.
No, of course not. No,
as a preacher, you do get used to having, in fact, I remember a homilist, a very great Dominican homilist who said, you can assume that you can prepare the most beautiful homily, you know, and powerful and so forth, and people will hear maybe 1/4 of it because they're distracted or they kind of lose their attention or you say something that gets them thinking about something else or, you know, they're hungry or thirsty or otherwise distracted. So you got to be able to make sure that your homily isn't so carefully constructed that each point depends on every other point, such that if you lose the thread, they're totally lost.
Exactly. Right? Oh, yeah,
so you're talking about homily construction. So Dominic and the Raven, that's a great story.
Yeah.
And I'll have to look where that was. That was probably in the same time period, though, that general was
it. It would have to be in the early days.
Okay, story number 5 has to do with the foundation of the order. And this is, once again, something I wasn't aware of or didn't even think about. I mean, until I actually went on pilgrimage. And that is, so how did Dominic go and the logistics? Think about just the logistics of founding an order.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've got Dominic there. He's been not really successful, honestly. There's a lot of violence. There's a whole almost kind of crusading movement against the Albigensians to kill them. There's Dominic, who is one of these lone voices saying, let's preach nonviolence, but let's bring the gospel to bear, even if it means we ourselves are martyred. He's got a couple of friends or followers that are people who are with him who are trying to help him. The Benedictines have flown the coop. The person, the bishop who initially had the plan, Diego, has passed away.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
So he's kind of on his own, and he's just living in this little kind of hovel in France. And in fact, he starts this women's group in Pruy, and there's kind of this little double monastery kind of thing, but it's not really a home base for his own sense of preaching and mission. And out of the blue, there's this man in Toulouse, so the main town there, the main city that's all these little towns kind of funnel into and are, if you will, kind of like villages of. Like
suburbs or whatever.
Is Toulouse.
Right.
And so that's the main, and to this day, it's kind of like the Silicon Valley if you've been there.
That's where St. Thomas's body is.
That's right. That's where his body is. Yeah. And so there's all kind of innovation now and kind of the Silicon Valley of France is there in Toulouse. And so, airplane stuff too. Anyway, digress. He wants to get into town somehow, but has no way to get purchased there. It would be trying to, like, if a religious community now is like, how do I buy property in San Francisco in order to start a group? Not going to happen.
Yeah.
The real estate
crisis? Yeah.
Could you imagine someone's like, I'm going to start, you know, a group and I want to start with, well, there's nothing. Well, Dominic connects with someone who is very moved by his preaching and basically says, I want to join and be part of your followers. His name is Peter Celia. And they go through all of Lent and they're preaching in the Lenten season. And Peter at the end says, on Easter Sunday, I want not enter the order per se, because this is early.
But he wants to join.
He wants to kind of be part of this movement, this local movement. Basically, it's the Toulousian movement, right? Yeah. I want to be part of this movement. Something's happening. And so I'm giving all of the rights of my home. He's very wealthy to you, Dominic, and to our little band of followers at that point. And so that was the first donation to the order of Peter, and that house is still there.
Yeah.
And you can go and visit that house, and it's not a huge house by modern standards, not like a mansion or something, but it's several rooms, and you definitely could. It's got a beautiful chapel there now, and it's basically almost a museum to Dominicana kind of stuff, with lots of image and pictures and so forth of the early time of the order, and a chapel there that we were able to pray. But Easter Sunday, in the year, I believe it was in the year 1215, so it was a year before they got official kind of commendation for the order by the Pope. The first land that the Dominicans were given as a, if you will, before they were Dominicans, but as a group corporately shared, was given by Peter. And so to be there. So in other words, there were so many, and it made me think of, it wasn't like that Dominic just went out and started preaching, people. He was like this charismatic guy that people kind of like, you know, gathered around, and all of a sudden the church was like, yeah, go for it. It was like there were logistics within logistics within, you know, administration thing. And Dominic was a genius at this, just administratively. Yeah. I mean, he set up his rule, and that's something that I think most people do know that story, but that we don't follow the rule of Dominic. We follow the rule of Augustine, because that same year, 1215, the Lateran Council, Fourth Lateran Council, basically said no more religious orders. No more religious. We're not approving any more rules. And guess what? That's still in. There's no more since 1215. There have been no new rules in the church. You got societies. You know, the Jesuits. You got Mother Teresa's group. The missionaries. You've got different movements. But there's no more rule of life that's ever been approved by the church since 1215.
Right.
And so Dominic said, "How do I do this?" Well, he took the rule of as you know, Saint Augustine.
But
that Easter Sunday 1215 is really in some way the birth of the order, even before it's approved, in terms of it having a there.
Yeah.
For the first time, it has a there.
We have a location. We're on the maps.
We're on the map. Yeah. Exactly. 1215, Easter Sunday, 1215, through the generosity of Peter, the movement, the local movement of preaching the gospel was put on the map
for the first time.
We had a headquarters.
Yeah, our first convent.
Exactly. So that's a story that most people don't think about. I didn't think about the logistics around, where are they living? Where are they sleeping?
Our first house.
First house.
I mean, especially considering if you think, I mean, we're the order of preachers or mendicants, we travel around. We don't need a home, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, so many stories of St. Dominic sleeping on the road with a rock beneath his head, right?
Absolutely.
So, but to have that kind of more administrative, more earthly headquarters to be put on the map, of course we would need one, but we don't think about it that way.
Exactly. Yeah. No. So it takes infrastructure. It takes administration. It takes hierarchy. It takes logistics to get spiritual things done.
Right.
And that's that just
whether we like it or not.
Exactly. It can't just be kind of just like spontaneous movements of charismatic utterance that move the church. Jesus, in fact, started a church. There were logistics there. He's building on the rock of Peter.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, sixth secret Saint Dominic story.
Sixth secret Saint Dominic story.
Don't say that fast.
Yeah, we'll just have it just. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Let's not do that.
Go
no, but I want to do something kind of more localized and so far that involves the novitiate. Actually.
Oh, okay, nice. Yeah.
So there's the story of where, probably at Toulouse, more I think about it, at Peter's house, of the brothers would have to go every day to beg around the village for the bread and all that such.
Daily sustenance.
Daily sustenance. And they came back with absolutely nothing. It was a flat day.
Mm.
Just didn't happen. So you know, some of the brothers, of course, were a little despairing and just kind of, okay, we're going to be starving for the night and feeling a little, you know, they felt that they, you know, did a bad job or whatever.
Yeah,
it happens.
Disappointment. We've been talking in C.S. Lewis about how the devil uses discouragement and disappointment. And when our expectations fall short, then we can be easily tempted.
Right.
So discouragement is on the doorstep. It's on the portal.
Yeah.
What happens?
So what happens is Father Dominic says, okay, let's just go inside the refectory and let us just pray.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly, angels come into the refectory with pots of food for dinner for the brethren, and they serve, and the angels serve the novices first, and then they go in the reverse of what we call the order of religion. From the novices, the youngest in the order, all the way to the oldest, and the last person that was served was Saint Dominic. And even to this day, that is kind of a custom that we've acquired over these 8 centuries of especially in this house, in the novitiate house, where the first people that go to dinner are the novices, and then the last person to be served is the prior himself.
That's right. Yeah. No. Yeah. And it's interesting that you say that, because that's I've never thought of it quite that way, but that's kind of what happens, right?
Yeah.
The novices end up first in line, and then maybe there's a few brothers mixed in there, but
then kind of wipes their way.
The pastor and the prior always kind of hang out towards the end and get it. Yeah. And there's also a nice tradition I know. The nuns regard this as well, where the youngest in religion, that is, and usually a novice, will get to be the prioress for a day, or at least make this. It's a fun thing. It's not like as if they're gonna, you know. So, but they get the schedule for the day, and they kind of, you know, it's kind of like what
they have when, to give permissions.
It's kind of like in school, principal for a day.
Yeah, principal,
you know,
for
like
a day.
We're like a first grader, or you know, a young elementary school student gets to be principal for the day. That's kind of thing. It's like prior for the day, the novices.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but yeah, that's a great story. I don't know if we had no food, which is absurd, but if we didn't for some reason, I don't know if Father Vincent calling us in and saying let's pray would go over too well.
Well, the guys, I think the brothers will do it.
But we were like, yeah.
But not with a cheerful disposition.
Yeah. I just wonder how confident Dominic was that angels were going to show up. It's kind of interesting. You hear these stories and you're like, they either had like much greater faith than I have, or the Lord really moved their hearts with a grace that I hope I'm open to given the same mm-hmm. situation.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Right? Because it does fall a little bit out of our own direct experience. But no, the Lord works. And there's lots of other examples of how the Lord works in that way. So that brings us to the seventh story of Saint Dominic. You might not have heard. Did you know that Dominic?
Know?
Did you know that? And this goes to, this is not directly a story of Saint Dominic, but how we got the name Order of Preachers.
Hmm.
So Dominic is not called the Dominican Order, right? Yeah. What would you expect the Dominicans to be called?
The word Dominican is a nickname, right? So I mean, so you'd call us a bunch of like traveling preachers or the mendicants or
yeah.
something like that.
Or Order of Saint Dominic, OSD or something.
Yeah, Order of Saint Dominic, yeah.
Well, so Dominic didn't formally like put in for I want to be known as the Order of Preachers. This comes from the Pope Innocent III at the time, who was addressing a letter to Dominic and his companions. So he starts by dictating this letter and he says, to Dominic and his companions. I thought, well, no, maybe that's not quite encapsulate everything I want. So he scratched that out and then he put to Dominic and those who are preaching in the local region of Toulouse. And he's like, that doesn't really capture what I want either. And so he scratches that out. And then he says, to Master Dominic and the brother preachers.
Ah, yeah.
So Magister Dominici mm-hmm. et Fratres Predicatorum. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So in Latin. So it was like, oh, well, when Innocent passes away, the next
Honorius III, right?
Yeah, basically yeah. comes to office. Dominic is there and he says, okay, I'm going to give you, because Dominic didn't say, I want to start an order as such. He wanted to be able to have, as he said, the preaching, the license to preach, basically.
Yeah.
He wants a license to preach.
Yeah. And these
to
guys teach do, it. Too. Yeah.
Exactly. And so the Pope looks back and say, well, how have we referred to these guys in the past?
Right.
Oh, Master Dominic.
Say?
Exactly. Yeah. And fratres, the brothers who are preaching. So you will be the brothers who preach, the order of preachers.
Yeah.
And so alighted through that sense of that this is somehow the genius of Dominic that's making this happen. This is really based on not who they're following mm-hmm. in a particular way, Dominic, but what they're called to do. So you right. will be fratres, brothers, the Dominican communities,
yeah.
who preach.
Yeah.
Predicatorum mm-hmm. of the preaching, right? So that the Ordo Predicatorum, the yeah. order of preachers, was basically named by the Pope in how he addressed the brothers, what he called yeah. them. And so it's interesting to think, I always, when I heard that story, once again, this is looking at they have letters. So when I was doing
right.
pilgrimage,
you
see some of these letters that were written to Dominic. And to know that how he addressed the letter became the official title
yeah.
makes you, when you're addressing, you know, sometimes you write someone a letter, you know, not too many actually these days are how you address
yeah.
things, you know, do I go formal? Do I, is it John or Johnny? Or Mr. Smith, or
yeah.
you know, whatever, but how you call someone or refer to someone can be in some way enshrined in that. It
right.
marks that relationship. So the church's relationship to us as mm-hmm. Dominicans was seen through that lens of what we do, preaching,
yeah.
which is unique. Once again, there's no other order that's named in that way. And so I didn't know I was like, wow, that was really, I always thought it was Dominic's initiative that said, this is what I want to be called. Like, I don't want to be called the Order of St. Dominic. This is what I want to be called. But no, it comes from the Pope himself who is addressing this letter. And then it just kind of caught on as this is exactly what we want to do. And it's what the mandate and the license we had.
Yeah. What are these guys doing?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's just, I mean, it, as you said, it's, we're the only, group of its kind that are actually named after the mission in which we do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So which I think is fascinating, and that the fact that it was, that emphasis was on the preaching and not just like, oh, we're following Dominic or we're following, you know, Blessed Jordan of Saxony or we're, I think there's,
or Peter Verona, whatever it
is. I think that's too why, part of why the Dominican order doesn't have different flavors, so to speak. There's mm-hmm. lots of different kinds of Franciscans. We've talked about this before, yes. Kinds of Benedictines. There are different kinds of religious groups from one kind of root.
Yeah.
There's no other Dominicans other than Dominicans. There's no Discalced Dominicans or Reformed Dominicans or whatever. We all need forming stuff. But I think it's because it wasn't part of it was the mentality wasn't we're simply following what Dominic said and did.
Yeah.
We're following the vision that St. Dominic had for
not the cult of personality.
Exactly.
But the cult of his mission and vision. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that vision doesn't change. That's always perennial. We need it perennial, true. And whenever we get too far off track with the way we're particularly living and need reform and conversion and so forth, we don't need to look further than the original vision and the original mission. That has everything we need. We don't need to reform the vision. We just need to reform ourselves towards that vision.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So 7-6. So did you know that Dominic?
Did you know?
So maybe to recap, did you know that Dominic basically taunted his would-be assassins and they put him across the assassin's cross? Did you know that Dominic number two was the story of
the barefoot.
Oh, the barefoot. Oh, did you know that Dominic? Did you know that Dominic? I'm going to rephrase. Barefoot. Did you know that Dominic likes sandals? No, I can't travel barefoot. Did you know that Dominic preached at Carcassonne and there that this kind of the Dominican vision was formed in those pastoral days in Carcassonne? Yeah. Did you know that
Dominic had great athletic hands?
There you go. Totally dexterous and nimble in every way. Yeah. Did you know that Easter Sunday 1215 was that moment when Dominic and his followers were put on the map. There was there for the first place in Peter's home. And did you know that Dominic
was fed by angels?
Was fed by angels, exactly. Yeah. And a community fed by angels. And did you know, lastly, that Dominic's movement blossomed into a worldwide order, not around his person, but around that vision he had for following in the preaching of Jesus Christ, that apostolic, those apostles sent out. He wanted to be in line and continuity with those apostles, and thus the
Order of Preachers.
Predicatorum, Order of Preachers is born.
Right. So happy St. Dominic's Day, happy St. Dominic's Month to all of us who are listening and viewing the video pod, and to you, Father Michael, our gracious pastor.
And to you, Father Isaiah, as well. Happy feast day, happy solemnity
of
Holy Father Dominic. And may all that we do truly during this month of August as we celebrate Holy Father Dominic truly inspire you to radiate the joy of the gospel here in the heart of the city. Amen.
Amen.